So, before I start, I'd like to beg the blessings of everybody in the room because you're all my seniors, and we need the blessings of Greater Vaishnav so that we can do anything. So I'm actually in an advantageous position because everybody can give me blessings. So I beg you humbly, as humbly as I can. And anyone that may be listening that's not sitting in the room, I don't know. I need your mercy for my success. Hopefully I can speak something which is at least purifying for myself. It may not be useful for you. may be purifying for me. So today we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 13, I believe 6 through 8, and we'll recite 8 together. I'll read 6 and 7, there's no purports, and then we can recite 8 together. Atra bhoktavyam asmabhir divarudham shudadita vatsahe samipe papitva charantu shanakaistrinam. I think we should take our lunch here, since we are already hungry, because the time is very late. Here the calves may drink water and go slowly here and there and eat the grass. So this is Krishna speaking to the cowherd boys, just after they've killed Agasura. Just after they've killed Agasura, he said, let's go, you know, this place is getting boring, let's go and go to the Yamuna, maybe we can take our lunch there. Actually, I wanted to speak a little bit of about how we got to this place in the Bhagavatam before I read these verses. So, in the end of the last chapter, Shukadeva Goswami, after narrating the Agasura Leela, he says that the cowherd boys went to the other Vrajvasis, and he explained to them that, they explained to them that that the cowherd boys, they told the other Vrajvasis about the Agasura Leela, but it was a year later, but they had explained it as though it had happened that very same day. And so Parikshit Maharaj, being a very attentive and inquisitive student, he thought, how can that be? It doesn't make any sense. Why would they wait a whole year to say it? And then two, why would they speak it like it just happened that day? And so Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami this question. He said, I don't understand how things that happened in the past can be presented as though they happened in the present, or the actual Sanskrit word is Vishmita, which means on that very day. Which means on that very day. So he was perplexed by this, and having asked Shukadeva Goswami this question, Shukadeva Goswami was extremely happy to hear the question, and then he fell into an immediate trance. He lost all external consciousness because of thinking deeper on the pastimes of Sri Krishna and his associates. And it's quite interesting because actually some of the commentators on these verses have said that the only way he could be roused from that trance, because it was so deep, was the loud kirtan of Narada Muni and Vyasadeva, who were also there on the banks of the Ganges, where Shukadeva was speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. So they did kirtan and did kirtan and did kirtan until he finally came back to consciousness. And then, upon waking up, so to speak, he started to glorify Parikshit Maharaj, and he said, You are a relisher of the Bhagavatam. It's proof that you are Sarabritam, that you're a dear devotee of Lord Krishna, and you are always engaged in relishing newer and newer pastimes and explanations because you are constantly churning the nectar. This whole time I've been speaking the Bhagavatam, you've been asking me questions that are actually allowing me to go deeper into the explanations. So he glorifies Parikshit Maharaj, because this is the nature of a Vaishnav. He glorifies other Vaishnavs unlimitedly. And so then he starts describing what he had previously left out, because he just went from, okay, Agasura is finished, he's been killed, to now the cowherd boys are back, it's the end of the day, and they tell the other Vrajvasis that this happened. But then he picks up where he left off. So he says, after Agasura was killed, then the cowherd boys, they went about their day. And so that's where these verses pick up. So Krishna has said, my dear friends, just see how this riverbank is extreme. That's yesterday's verse. So he's brought them to the riverbank of the Yamuna, He said, let's go. Let's go find a place for the cows to take grasses. And that's this verse. He said, I think we should take our lunch here since we're already hungry because the time is very late. Here the calves may drink water and go slowly here and there and eat the grass. So the next verse is, Tateti payavitarba vatsan arudya sadvale mukta shikyani bubuju samam bhagavata muda. Accepting Lord Krishna's proposal, the cowherd boys allowed the calves to drink water from the river and then tied them to trees where there was green, tender grass. Then the boys opened their baskets of food and began eating with Krishna in great transcendental pleasure. So they've begun taking their lunch. And the verse that I'll be mainly speaking on today is text 8. It's where Prabhupada has left a very nice purport. So we can recite this one together. Krishna Shavishvak Pururaji Mandalaya. Abhyanana Pula Drisho Vrajarbhaka. Sahopavishta Vipine Virejush. Chadayatam Bhodha Karnikaya. Krishna Shavishvak Pururaji Mandalaya. Abhyanana Paladrisho Vrajarbhaka. Sahopavishta Vipine Virejush. Chadayatam Bhodha Karnikaya. If anybody would like to repeat. Krishnasya Vishwak Pururaji Mandalaya Abhyanana Pula Drisho Vrajarmukha Sahopavishta Vipine Virejush Chadayatam Bhodha Karnikaya. Krishnasya Vishvak Pururaji Mandalaya Abhyanana Puradrisho Vrajarbhaka Sahopavishta Vipine Virejush Chatayatam Bhodha Karnikaya. Shavishvak Pururaji Mandalaya Pura Disho Vrajarbhaka Sahopavishta Vipine Vitejush Chadayatam Bodha Karnikaya. So the word for word, Krishnasya Vishvak, surrounding Krishna. Puru Raji Mandalai, by different encirclements of associates. Abhyanana, everyone looking forward to the center, where Krishna was sitting. Pula Drishaha, their faces looking very bright because of transcendental pleasure. Vraja Ardbakaha, all the cowherd boys of Vrajabhumi. Saha Upavishta, sitting with Krishna. Vipine, in the forest. Videju, so nicely and beautifully made. Chada, petals and leaves. Yata, just as. Ambo Ruha, of a lotus flower, Karnikaya, of the whirl. Translation: like the whirl of a lotus flower surrounded by its petals and leaves, Krishna sat in the center, encircled by lines of his friends, who all looked very beautiful. Every one of them was trying to look forward toward Krishna, thinking that Krishna might look toward him. In this way, they all enjoyed their lunch in the forest. And the purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. To a pure devotee, Krishna is always visible. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti, and as indicated by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvata Pani Padam Tat Sarvato Shi Shiro Mukham. If by accumulating pious activities, Kritta Punya Punja, one is raised to the platform of pure devotional service, Krishna is always visible in the core of one's heart. One who has attained such perfection is all beautiful in transcendental bliss. The present Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to keep Krishna in the center. For if this is done, all activities will automatically become beautiful and blissful. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militangena Tasmai Shri Gurubhye Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantitam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bhanda Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vanchakalpa Tribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Kadadhar Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumam Teginim Yat Kripam Tamaham Bhakti Shri Gurum Dhin Taranam. So here we are, the cowherd boys and Krishna are taking lunch. This is like the epitome of Sakya Ras. You're sitting on the banks with Krishna and they're all taking lunch with him. And so it's a really beautiful scene that's described. All the cowherd boys are gathered. It's like if you look at a lotus flower, the whirl is in the center of the lotus flower, and the cowherd boys are all compared to the leaves and the petals that are circled around and surrounding that whirl that is Krishna. And it's said here in the translation that every one of them was trying to look forward toward Krishna, thinking that Krishna might look toward him. In this way, they all enjoyed their lunch in the forest. So they all had this deep desire that, oh, let Krishna look at me. You know, we're with all our friends, but I hope he just glances at me. I hope he just takes a look at me. And so some of our acharyas, they've also commented that actually to reciprocate with this desire, because Krishna is only interested in reciprocating with the loving desires of his devotees, that's really his whole purpose. That's what Krishna does. He relishes love. To reciprocate with the desire of each individual cowherd boy, he employs what's called his Sarva Sankalpa Shakti. And he made it seem as though his faces and his limbs were facing in every direction at once. So in effect, what this did is for every cowherd boy, he was looking directly at them. Not only looking directly at them, but to them it appeared that he was sitting right in front of them, you know, as opposed to all the other cowherd boys. He was sitting right with them and speaking to them and relishing with them. And they were all thinking, wow, I'm so fortunate. Krishna is paying attention to me right now. He's giving me his time. Krishna's right here. Because they had this desire that let Krishna look at me, you know. Maybe they're thinking, you know, maybe he'll look at me when he cracks a joke, or maybe he'll hand me that next preparation. you know, something like that. And so to reciprocate with these pure desires of his pure devotees, he employed his shakti, and he did it for all of the infinite number of cowherd boys that were there. And each one was thinking, wow, all the other cowherd boys, they're here, you know, but they're on the side right now. Krishna's mine. I'm here and I'm with him, you know. So that's one beautiful thing that I was, when I was studying for this verse, that I saw. And then to substantiate this, Srila Prabhupada, he doesn't say it in the exact way that some of the other commentators say, but he quotes the same verse from Bhagavad Gita. This sarvata pani padam tat sarvatoshi shiro mukam. This verse is, it's verse 13:14, 13th chapter, 14th verse. And what it's saying is that Krishna, as the super soul, he has arms and legs and hands and faces and feet, and he manifests those everywhere. And as the super soul, he knows the heart of all living beings. So in that effect, he does this. He knows the heart of each individual cowherd boy, and he's reciprocating with them by expanding his form just to please the senses of that devotee who wants to reciprocate with him. And Prabhupada says in the purport, he talks about, how does he say it? Yeah, he says, to a pure devotee, Krishna is always visible. So he's explaining this. He says, he's always visible in the core of one's heart. And one who has attained such perfection is all beautiful and transcendental bliss. Then he also quotes this very quickly. He says, if by accumulating pious activities, Krita Punya Punja, one is raised to the platform of pure devotional service, Krishna is always visible in the core of one's heart. So I was looking at this Krita Punya Punja. I've heard this in a couple other lectures, that one may wonder, how is it that pious activities one can attain Krishna consciousness? Because that's like square one. We learned that very early on, that by piety, by impiety, God is neutral to these things because they're temporary. They happen in this world. One may be pious now, and in the next life he may be impious, up and down. So Krishna isn't so concerned with piety. It's more of a karma kanda thing. It may help with devotion if one is already involved in devotional activities, but it doesn't actually move one towards the goal of Krishna consciousness in a concrete way. It's, in other words, advancement in Krishna consciousness isn't dependent on piety or impiety. So I went and I looked at this term, Krita Punya Punja, which actually occurs half a chapter back. It's Canto 10, chapter 12, verse 11. The last line of verse 11 is this Krita Punya Punja, and it's actually describing Krishna with the cowherd boys, and it's describing their great fortune. And so our acharyas, they have explained that what this great fortune is referring to, even though punya is the word that's used, is it's referring to bhakti. Because, as I said earlier, punya, in the material sense, it can affect Krishna consciousness. And so this punya is a transcendental type of punya, and it means that the cowherd boys have basically selflessly been doing so many things just for Krishna's pleasure. And their only desire is to see Krishna and to be with Krishna. Therefore, Krita Punya Punja. Therefore, how can we know? Well, how can we even estimate their great fortune? Another thing. And so that brings up the question, what is pleasing to Krishna? What does Krishna actually like? What is this bhakti? How can we, in our small little place that we are, I speak for myself, in the small place that I am, I don't know where the rest of you are, and I'm your junior, but how can I begin to acquire some of this Krita Punya Punja that will bring me someday, eventually, to the goal that we've all been gracefully given by Srila Prabhupada? And I was thinking about that, and in order to start doing that, what's required is a definition. It's required to know what that is. Many people may have some idea or other. If you go out on the street and you talk to any average Indian, they'll tell you, I know Krishna, I know what he wants, I know what he likes, I grew up with him, you know, I know Bhagavad Gita, I know all these things. But they don't know what is this Krita Punya Punja. They don't know what bhakti is. They don't know what this process is. So I thought to talk a little bit about that, because it's relevant. And then also, when you talk about bhakti, it's always beautiful. So it's always nice to hear, even though we know these things already. So I was thinking, well, when I was looking at this description of Krita Punya Punja in one of the purports, one of the commentators, he says that punya refers to activities that are directly pleasing to Krishna, and then he adds, by which Krishna comes under the devotee's control, which reminded me of the last effect of bhakti that Rupa Goswami describes in Nectar of Devotion, this Sri Krishna Akarshani, that Krishna is helplessly attracted. He's pulled. Krishna, the word Krishna means all attractive. It has the same root Krish as the word Karshna, which means pull. Like Sankarshan means one who pulls everything. He completely pulls everything. It's another name for Krishna. Usually we use it for Balaram, but it's also applicable. And so Akarshini means that Krishna is pulled. Sri Krishna Akarshini. So even though he's all attractive and he attracts everything, what is the one thing that attracts him? It's pure bhakti. Bhakti. His bhakta, doing things that are only motivated out of a desire to please him, motivates him to want to do things for his bhakta that will only please them. That's the transcendental relationship. So I saw that line, I was reminded of that when I saw this, by which Krishna comes under the devotee's control. So what is pleasing to Krishna in a more definite way? What kind of activities lead to this? What can we do? What can we offer? What can be done in order to begin knowing this process? I won't be so audacious as to say to start doing it immediately, because it's a very high thing, but to begin cultivating the consciousness that Prabhupada started this movement for. And so I thought of a couple more verses. A couple things came to mind. The fact that Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana. That the implication of this bhava grahi janardana, grahi means to take, to pull. Like a planet is known as a graha because it has influence, you know, because it pulls on your karma, it pulls on your destiny. And depending on the situation of the planets, that's what astrology is for. Depending on the situation of the planets, you are affected in a certain way. So Krishna, he takes only, and he only exerts influence. And really, he only reciprocates with the bhav of his devotees, bhavagrahi janardana, with the mood in which things are offered. He's not so interested in what we are offering per se, because he has everything. He's in the spiritual world. You can look for beautiful flowers here, but you can't know the kind of flowers that are in the spiritual world. You can play beautiful music here, but you can't know the type of music that is played. You know, even if it's sometimes it's described, I've heard Dina Bandhu Prabhu describe the Leela of the Govardhan Leela, and he's described that after the demigods, they all do their music and they worship Krishna and they give him the name Govinda, that the coward boys then come and they sing. They pick up the same instruments and they sing, but because they're simple Rajvasis, they sing out of tune and they don't know how to play the instruments, but Krishna is inestimably more happy with that singing and that offering. Because why? Because the bhav is there. Because they love Krishna. They only know Krishna. Krishna is theirs. In their minds, my Krishna, my best friend. I love him. So Krishna is bhavagrahi janardana. He's looking for this. He's not looking so much for the external things. And then another verse came to mind, this patram pushpam palam toyam that we hear in the Bhagavad Gita. Yo me bhakta prayachchati. That, oh Arjuna, I accept a flower, a fruit, even leaves. Leaves aren't so pretty, you know. Flowers are nice, fruits, okay. But I take leaves, I even take a little bit of water. If you offer it to me with bhakti, I take it and I relish it. Because that's what I'm interested in, actually. I'm not interested in the vessels of the things that are part of this temporal world and constantly fluctuating and moving around, but if you offer me love, that's what I want. And then again, something else came. Bhaktiyaham ekaya grahayam. In the 11th canto, Krishna tells Uddhava, the only thing I'm moved by, of all things, the only thing that I move for is bhakti. Bhaktiyaham ekaya grahayam. He uses this word again, grahayam. I'm only moved, I'm only influenced, I'm only pulled, eka, only by bhakti. So, I was thinking of this, and as I was thinking about it, I realized I had just read the day before, after Subal Prabhu asked me to give class, a really, really, really beautiful pastime, which summarizes all of this. And somehow or other, you know, when we read, sometimes we're just reading, and it's our sadhana, and we're getting through it, and it's beautiful, but it doesn't hit us in the heart. But we continue, because that's sadhana bhakti. We have to keep going. Taste or no taste, you know? A lot of times there's going to be no taste. That's part of practicing. But when I was reading this towards the end of it, I felt something very nice. You know, nothing spectacular. I didn't, you know, I'm not Shukadeva Goswami. I didn't fall into internal consciousness. But I just felt that is so beautiful. You know, and then when I was studying for this verse to give class, because normally I shoot from the hip, I don't study, but I thought, I'm in a new place, I don't want to be humbled. too bad, you know. Better study, take the humble route. And I was studying, and then after I thought these verses I just told you, I was like, oh man, I was just reading that yesterday. This is so, so perfect. And so the pastime that I'd like to share a little bit, if you don't mind, is the Leela where Sudama Brahmana, he goes to Krishna in Dwarka. And yeah, so I'd like to tell this. So Sudama Brahmana was very poor. He's a Nishkam Bhakta. He was actually, there are two types of Nishkam Bhaktas described. Nishkam means without desire. And it's explained that one type of Nishkam Bhakta is averse to material opulence, and the other kind is just indifferent to it. And Sudama Brahmana was averse to material opulence. He wanted nothing to do with it because he didn't want things to get in the way of his love for Krishna. And he had this natural humility that he was afraid that if he had opulence, then it would get in his way and he wouldn't be able to worship Krishna. The other type is some devotee like Uddhava, devotees who are in an opulent position because they have something to carry out, and so Krishna gives them some grand opulences, some enjoyment, because they have a place. Like Prabhupada would say, he would say that the government official, he has so many amenities because he has a responsibility. So there are two types of Nishkam Bhaktas, Premi Bhaktas. One who's averse, one who's indifferent. Sudama Brahmana, he was averse because he was just living a simple life with his wife in the village or in the town. It's not specified if it was a village or a town. But he was living with his wife, living a simple life, just worshiping Krishna, meditating like that. So naturally, because of this, he was extremely austere. He hardly ate. Actually, he only ate what came. He didn't take up any occupation other than maybe teaching, you know, things that brahmanas do. He had no occupation being a brahmana. And so he was emaciated. It's described that you could see every vein in his body. It was just really, really, really thin and gaunt, and he wore, like Shukadeva Goswami says, is there not torn cloth in the street? He wore torn cloth, he wore tattered rags, you know. Look, he looked like a vagrant, actually, because of his renunciation. And his wife, also following him, took up the same standard of living. And so one day, his wife wasn't able to beg something in order to give him. And so she was thinking, I can't take this anymore. I'm serving my husband, my life is happy, we're devotees, but I can't even give him anything to eat. It's actually described that she was more austere than him because anything she begged, she gave him to eat first. And so she went to Sudama Brahmana and she said, please, my lord, this is too much. She actually came up with a very calculated response because she's a very intelligent Brahmani. And so she thought to ask Krishna to go speak to Krishna, ask Sudama Brahmana, I'm sorry, to go speak to Krishna in Dwarka. And she loaded her question so that Sudama Brahmana wouldn't really be able to argue. So she said, please, and I'm paraphrasing now, but she said, please, isn't it that your exalted friend from Gurukul, isn't he the Lord of Dwarka, who is Brahmanya, who is favorable to the devotees, who is Sharanya, who he gives to those that are surrendered to him? He's Bhagavan. He's Sattvata Pati, he's the Lord of the devotees. You know, can you go ask him for some charity, please? You're suffering. We don't have any food. I'm suffering because I'm terrified now because I'm not going to be able to give you anything. And I'm even terrified now because I know you're humble. I know you don't want to go. You won't want to go ask him. But will you please? Your Lord won't want to see you suffering like this. Will you please go and speak to him? And so she loaded her question like this because she knew that Sudama Brahmana, being a naturally humble devotee, he would say, how could Krishna be favorable to someone as fallen as myself? And so she said, he's Brahmanya. You're a Brahmana. You're a Brahmana and he's Brahmanya. He's favorable to the devotees, to the Brahmins rather. Please go to him. And then Sudama Brahmana, being a Vaishnav, he naturally said, I may be born a Brahmana, but I don't have the qualities of a Brahmana. You know, how can I go? I'm just a pretender. Krishna won't listen to me. And then she said, he gives shelter to those who are surrendered to him. So you may argue you don't have any qualities, but I see you're doing your bhajan every day. You're worshiping Lord Krishna. You're surrendered to him. You don't even eat because of your staunch surrender to Lord Krishna. And then being a devotee, again, Sudama Brahmana would say, I'm not even a devotee. What to speak of being surrendered? I have no devotion for Lord Krishna. And then she says, but Krishna is Bhagavan. So naturally doesn't want to see you suffer. But Sudama Brahmana, being intelligent, being studied in the Shastras, he was in the same Gurukul as Krishna. He says, Bhagavan is equally disposed to the countless karmic sufferings of the conditioned souls. Why should he give wealth to me? He's neutral. I'm just another conditioned soul in samsara. And so then she says, he's Sattvata Pati. He's the Lord of the devotees. So even if Bhagavan won't give you something, his devotees will give you something. Just go there. Just by them knowing that you are the friend of Krishna from his childhood, they will give you everything. Please go. She begs, please, I can't take this anymore. So Sudama Brahmana, he was thinking, I don't want to go and ask my Lord for something material. You know, I don't like this. I don't like this. So he dismissed it. And then he thought about it. And his wife kept coming to him and asking and presenting arguments like this. There are four or five more that are given. And finally, he thought, you know, it would be the perfection of my life to see Krishna again. So on the pretext of going, he said, okay. I'll go, because now, through your talking, you've incited a desire for me to see Krishna. So I'll go to Dwarka, and I'll go ask him. But you have to give me something, because I can't go see my friend empty-handed. I haven't seen him in so long. It's not cultured. It's not... Do we have anything in the house? I know we don't... They practically didn't have anything. Their roof was caving in. The walls were falling over. Do we have anything in the house? And so she said, I'll go beg something. You just wait right here, because she was happy that, okay, he's going to go. She knew, because she was also a devotee, that Krishna would fulfill his desires and fulfill her desires. Her desires were unmotivated because she only desired that her husband be happy. She was torn apart when she couldn't even give him food. So her desires weren't for herself either. So she said, she was very happy. Good, you'll go, I'll go beg. So she begged four palmfuls of chipped rice, dry poha, like we get from the Indian stores. Unsoaked poha, you know? And so she wrapped it up in a torn piece of cloth and she said, here, you give this. You give this to him. This is all we have. He'll accept it. So he said, okay, I have a gift now. I can go. And he set along, and as he was walking to Dwarka, he went with some brahmanas. He thought, how will I even get into Dwarka? Now look at me. I'm emaciated. I have torn cloth. I look like a vagabond. this place is guarded by the Vrishnis, the Andakas, the Yadus. You know, this is the most heavily guarded place in the universe, practically. The Lord lives here with the Goddess of Fortune. It's in the middle of the ocean. There's a tunnel underneath the ocean you have to cross just to get in. Even if I get in, how will I get past all the gates that are guarding Krishna's palaces? So he was wondering, probably it won't even happen, but I'll try. So he got to Dwarka, and he got in. Somehow, they let him through the gates. And so he said, let me try another one. And he walked through the gate of the Vrishnis. And then he walked through the gate of the Andakas. And then he walked through the gate of the Yadus, the closest ones to Krishna, his immediate family. And then he was at the 16,000 palaces of Krishna's queens. And then he was at Rukmini's palace, the principal palace of Krishna, of Krishna's wives. And so he went in, and he saw Krishna sitting on Rukmini's bed. And Krishna saw him, and he stood up, and he walked to Sudama Brahmana, and he just embraced him with tears in his eyes. He embraced Sudama Brahmana. He said, he didn't say anything, actually. He embraced him with tears in his eyes, and then he sat him down on the bed without saying anything, and he worshipped him, as he should the Brahmanas. Sorry, right hand. He worshipped him. He offered all the arti paraphernalia. He donated a cow to him. He offered him betel nut. And then he spoke. And he said, my dear Brahmana, you've come from so far. Oh, I remember you from Gurukul. Do you remember me? And how are you doing? Because he saw that Sudama Brahmana was in a tattered condition. He had this torn cloth, and he was very emaciated. He was very ghastly, especially for the Dwarkavasis to see, because it's very opulent there. It's more opulent than Vaikuntha. So he was looking very ghastly, and so Krishna was questioning, is your life going okay? Have you married a nice wife after leaving the ashram of our guru? You know, is everything okay? Sudama Brahmana didn't answer. He just, very humbly, he was just happy to be there with Krishna. And all the Vrajvasis were thinking, sorry, the Dwarkavasis were thinking, who is this person who's looking so ghastly? And Krishna just hugged him. He's got tears in his eyes speaking to him. Who is this person? And so when Krishna said, Do you remember our times in the Gurukul together, in the Gurukul of Sandipani Muni? They all said, wow, this is Krishna's friend from his childhood? So amazing. And they were just completely amazed that this person, who they would have judged externally for so many reasons, he was a deep, intimate friend of Krishna. And so then Krishna continued, and he described one instance of their time together in the Gurukul. He said, Sudama. Actually, sorry, at that point, Sudama Brahmana was thinking, you know, maybe he's thinking I'm somebody else. Does he really, like, he worshipped me so much because he was his devotee, so naturally it was a little awkward for him that the situation was flipped, that Krishna was worshipping him. So he was thinking, he's just worshipped me so much and I'm so wretched. Does he realize who I am? And then Krishna, detecting this thought even, because he's in the hearts of everybody, he said, do you remember that time in Gurukul where our guru's wife sent us into the forest and sent us to collect firewood? And then, even though it was winter, and no storms come in wintertime, it's always dry, a huge monsoon came, and the rain and the thunder was so powerful that we couldn't get our way out of the forest before night fell. And then night fell, and we were completely lost. We had no idea where to go. We were wondering, how are we going to get out of this? And so we just sat all night, walking around the forest, looking for high ground, because it was raining so hard it was flooding, and we just held hands. Do you remember that night? And then our guru, the next morning, he came, and he found us, and he was so pleased that we had made such a sacrifice to serve him, and he gave us so many blessings and so many benedictions and showered so much love on us. Do you remember that, Sudama? Do you remember that? Krishna said this to Sudama Brahmana, and then he realized, he knows who I am. And Sudama Brahmana was just moved. To this point, he hadn't even said anything. He was just in awe and so happy to see his friend. And then at that point, he couldn't take it anymore, so he just started glorifying Krishna. He said, it's just your pastime that you take, you went to a Gurukul, and what great fortune do I have that I could be in Gurukul with you, that I could relish these things with you. And Krishna just laughed it off as a friend. And then he said, yes, we did so many things together. So many things we did together. Do you remember all of them? Do you remember them? And so Sudama Brahmana was just moved by this. And then Krishna was thinking, my devotee has a gift for me. I know, because I have the Sanskrit here. Something nice. Krishna is Sarva Bhuta Maya Bhigya. He knows the hearts of everybody. He knows everything. So he immediately saw, Sudama has a gift. Sudama has a gift for me. But he doesn't want to give it because he thinks that it's embarrassing. He thinks that whatever he has, now that he's here, he's seen the opulence of Dwarka, he's seen me, he's now ashamed of this gift. But to glorify my devotee, I am going to devise a plan to get this gift from him. And so he said, Sudama, I know you have very deep affection for me, and it doesn't make sense to me that you would have come this far to see me, who also have deep affection for you, empty-handed. Did you bring some gift? And so Sudama said, oh, my lord, you know, I brought something, but I can't give it to you, you know, it's not, no, I won't do it, I can't give, just forget about it, just forget about this gift, you know? And then Krishna, he said, even if my devotee offers only a little with devotion, it becomes plenty. Don't worry that it's meager or that it's a humble offering. I don't mind for that. You're my friend, you're my devotee. Please, let's see the gift, you know? It's the thought that counts, we say, you know? So Sudama said, no, really, you know, when I took this from home, I didn't think deeply about it. I just asked my wife to get me something because I had to come here with something. But it's unsuitable. I can't give this to you. And Sudama was thinking, it's just chipped rice. It's a dry taste. It's stale by now. I've been walking and walking and carrying it. We begged it from someone else. No. So then Krishna, he speaks the same verse that he says in Bhagavad Gita. It's in the Bhagavatam, one of the texts of the Bhagavatam. He says, Patram pushpam palam toyam, yo me bhaktya prayashiti. He says, even flowers, fruits, even a leaf, even some water, yo me bhaktya prayashiti, if you offer it to me with devotion, I not only take it, I relish it. The implication here is that don't think it's too meager, or don't think it'll be stale or tasteless for me. The implication of him speaking this verse is that if somebody gives me leaves or flowers with enough devotion, I don't even consider whether they're food or not. I just eat them. I will eat flowers, Sudama, if you offer me flowers. What did I do for Vidura's wife? I ate banana peels. Why? Because she offered them with deep, deep bhav, deep devotion. So Krishna says this. Even so, Sudama was just embarrassed. No, I can't. I can't offer this to you. It's just. He just hung his head, and he didn't say anything. And by hanging his head, the implication was, please stop. You know, stop goading me. I'm not going to give it to you. I just can't do it. I won't do it. Don't mock me anymore. Because Krishna was laughing. It wasn't a grave exchange. It was very, on Krishna's side, he was laughing and he was very much happy to see his devotee. But Sudama was feeling very embarrassed about this gift. So by hanging his head, he was implying that, let's just change the subject. You know, I won't do it. And then Krishna understood immediately that he's actually come because his wife begged him to come. And she only begged him to come because she couldn't stand to see him suffering anymore. And so because these two are completely selfless, he's completely devoted to me, he's a Nishkam Bhakta, and she's completely devoted to him. She's even more austere than him, again, because anything she begs, she offers to him to eat, and she fasts more than he does. So they're both completely dedicated, and they have no personal interest. So I'm going to give them more than the demigods have. Krishna made this resolve right here. And he said, in order to enact that, I'm going to carry out my plan. And so he snatched the chipped rice from Sudam. He took it from him. And he said, what is this? What have you brought me, Sudama? This is amazing. And he took a bite. He ate a palmful of it. There were four palmfuls. And he said, don't think that this is stale and tasteless. This will not just satisfy me, but by satisfying me, it will satisfy the whole universe. And he went to take another bite, and Rukmini grabbed his arm. And she said, what are you doing? Please don't take any more, because we want some also. Your wonderful devotee has brought you this amazing gift. Don't eat all of it. You have to save some for us. We're your dependents. She wanted his remnants also, and all the queens would naturally want anything Krishna took. And the other implication, which is an aside, was that because Rukmini is a queen, and because she's very aristocratic, she was also thinking it's not so fit that her husband eat chipped rice. But she kept that to herself. She just sent a glance to one of her maidservants that this is too much for me. So she also grabbed his arm because she just thought his stomach will be upset. I can't have my lord eating chipped rice anymore. That's different. Different moods, different devotees. Like we were talking about earlier, Krishna is reciprocating with everyone at the same time. So then Krishna, he stops. And he continues to glorify it, but he doesn't eat any more. He sets it aside. And they continue to have some conversation. It's not elucidated what they talk about. But then Sudama eats and he takes rest. He stays the night in that palace. And then he sets out for home. He goes to go back to wherever he's from. The place isn't specified. And on his way, he's just thinking, wow, my Lord is so merciful and amazing. And I'm so happy to have gotten his darshan. He embraced me. He spoke such sweet words. We exchanged. It was just, I'm completely satisfied. You know? So I was too, me, I couldn't ask him for anything, because Sudama never asked Krishna for the benedictions that he intended to, that his wife had asked him to go and beg for, because he was too embarrassed and humble. And the situation with the chipped rice, that was enough embarrassment for him. He just thought, I can't ask my Lord for anything. So then he started thinking, actually, rather than giving me wealth, the Lord gave me the great treasure of his association, which is much more than any wealth I could have even asked him for, anything I could have wanted. So actually, I'm already the winner. And then, even if he had given me wealth, he knows my heart, so maybe he knew what I was coming to beg for, but he didn't give it to me because he knows my mentality. He knows that if I were to get some opulence, then I would just be waylaid on the path. I would be absorbed in that opulence. I can't handle that. So it was his mercy that I'm still a poor Brahmana, and I'm happy to be. Sudama was situated nicely before. He only came because his wife begged him. He didn't want any opulence. So he's walking home. Finally, he gets to where his house is supposed to be. And he sees a palace. He sees multiple palaces. It's described that their brilliance was like a combination of the sun, of fire, and of the brilliance of the sun, fire, and gold, something like that. I don't remember the third one. I think it was gold. And so it was like blinding opulence. And the first thing he thought was, what, did I take a wrong turn? Where am I? And he looked around, and I'm adding this, but it says that he identified that it was his house. That's my neighbor's house. This is my house. But what happened? You know, he was thinking, where did this come from? He saw gardens and palaces and beautiful women and beautiful demigod-like men there in the garden, you know. And then some servants came out and were walking towards him, and he's thinking, who are all these people? And then he knew, my Lord, I didn't even have to say anything. and he gave me all of this opulence. And then a beautiful woman came out of the palace and started walking towards him, and he was thinking, who is this demigoddess? She looks like the goddess of fortune who is walking towards me. Who is this demigoddess, and why is she walking towards a wretch like me? And then one maidservant off to the side, because now the palace was full of maidservants, said, that's your wife. She's your wife. Yeah, that's your wife. And then he thought, my God. And so his wife paid obeisances to him, and it said that she embraced him within the core of her heart. And then he had stayed looking emaciated and ragged so that he could have this realization of realizing, of seeing the palace, and also so she could still recognize him. As soon as she recognized him, he also basically got a demigod body. And so they went into the palace, and he saw that the opulence was like that in Dwarka. It was more than the demigods have. And so then he started thinking. He started to wonder, why didn't the Lord say anything to me? Why didn't the Lord, you know, give any indication? Why didn't he, if he knew what was in my heart, why did he do all of this silently and wait for me to get back to my home when he gave this to me? And he had a realization. And that, I won't speak from my memory, I'd like to read, because this was the part when I was reading this that really struck me and I found extremely beautiful. So the verse is, it's text 34 of chapter 80. After all, my friend Krishna, the most exalted of the Dasharas and the enjoyer of unlimited wealth, noticed that I secretly intended to beg from him. Thus, even though he said nothing about it when I stood before him, he actually bestowed upon me the most abundant riches. In this way, he acted just like a merciful rain cloud. And then the purport, which is where, that's beautiful, because it's the Bhagavatam. But this, the purport, is what really struck me. Sudama thought, if Krishna has bestowed this wealth upon me, then why did he not tell me about it when we met in Dwarka? Certainly, my friend directly speaks and gives abundant wealth to beggars like myself. I surmise that Krishna did not mention how he was going to fulfill my unspoken request, because at that time he was thinking, my dear friend has given me these grains of rice, which are greater than all the treasures I own. Even though in his own house he had no such gift to bring me, he took the trouble of begging it from a neighbor. Therefore, it is only proper that I give him something more valuable than all of my possessions. But nothing is equal to or greater than what I possess. So all I can do is give him such meager things as the treasures of Indra, Brahma, and other demigods. Embarrassed at being unable to properly reciprocate Sudama's offering, Sri Krishna bestowed his favor on him silently. So just like Sudama was embarrassed to offer the chipped rice, Krishna felt embarrassed that he couldn't even reciprocate with that chipped rice. He thought, there's nothing I can do to reciprocate with the love that is imbued in this chipped rice because of Sudama's devotion. And so I want to give him something, but I have to do it silently because it's an if I say it, it's an embarrassment. I just can't bring myself to do it. Sri Krishna bestowed his favor on him silently. Krishna acted just like a magnanimous rain cloud, which provides the necessities of life for everyone near and far, but feels ashamed that its rain is too insignificant a gift to give in return for the abundant offerings that farmers make to it. Out of shame, the cloud may wait until nighttime, when the farmers are asleep, before watering their fields. This is the position of Krishna, the best of the generous dynasty of Yadus. So then I was thinking about this last sentence that Prabhupada says, the present Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to keep Krishna in the center, for if this is done, all activities will become automatically beautiful and blissful. Because this is what it means to keep Krishna in the center, to think about Krishna, to read about Krishna, to hear about Krishna, and to aspire towards what we hear. We hear about these beautiful things by hearing about Krishna reciprocating like this, and the beautiful things that happen between his devotees, it becomes more and more apparent that we would much rather be a part of that reality than the reality that we're in. It's such a beautiful thing. And why am I wasting my time playing around here, doing this and doing that? And then in that way, all of our duties, all the things that we have to do, we can carry out in the right consciousness. So that was my attempt at doing this. I was really happy, actually, that when Prabhu asked me to give class, it happened like this, and I was really affected by this pastime, and so to be able to reiterate it is nice for myself. So if there are any questions or comments or corrections, please, I welcome them.
Thanks, Bhakti Joshua. Very nice class. Just thinking of a question in terms of just, it's very nice that you narrated that pastimes of Sudama Brahmana. It's a very touching one, and when one thinks of the of just the mindset and the mood of both Sudama and Krishna is indeed very touching. And is naturally very often that we think that, you know, it's obvious to most of us that we feel very limited in our capacity to actually perform, you know, service appropriately, or to, it's almost like, you know, the being conscious that Krishna is accepting something quite you know, not appropriate or not up to the standard. Sometimes in general, when it happens at, to me when I'm doing deity worship, or also just any type of devotional service, just thinking that my devotional service is mixed with something else that is, you know, it's like offering sweet rice with a little salt, or with some salt, or with sand, or something like that, that is not offerable. So that feeling is always there. But obviously, you know, we're not in the level of, I mean, Sudama Brahmana is having those feelings, but his devotion is very attractive to Krishna.
Yeah.
Not necessarily I would say that of myself, you know. I mean, there's something that is there, but it's more, I always think of like when a parent or a teacher is accepting to encourage, you know, the effort of a student or a child and things like that. So how, in one sense, I mean, at times thinking that, you know, not necessarily, I mean, Krishna is very kind and he accepts, but this is not necessarily very pleasing. It's always that feeling. So not sure if it's accurate. What do you think about that?
I didn't really catch the question.
Well,
I caught everything that led up to it, but what's
I'm not sure that this is an, in general, you know, we may feel like that, but how accurate that feeling is from the perspective of the scriptures.
And that, just to recapitulate, how accurate is the feeling Are you saying how accurate are my own feelings of inadequacy juxtaposed to the like somebody like Sudama Brahmana?
That's very clear. Yeah. We're very, you know, but in terms of Krishna, accepting and being pleased with that effort, you know, like that.
I'm still trying to wrap my brain around the question. So how accurate is that feeling of inadequacy in terms of Krishna accepting it?
Perspective.
From his perspective, like,
yes.
Is the question how much does he appreciate those type of feelings?
The feeling and also the service itself. Mm. You know, that obviously is, you know, yeah. It's like accepting something that is not necessarily, I mean, in the case of Sudama, is imbued with love.
Yeah.
In the case of someone like myself, there is some devotion, but it's also imbued with all kinds of other motivations that are there. Mm. So what's the thing of Krishna's accepting this?
I think I understand now. Well, a few answers come to mind. First off, we may be mired down in ignorance, you know, to put it bluntly. We may have so many things that we admit that I'm still attached to this, I'm still attached to that. I was in Australia for a month, and in my heart, I really birthed the desire to learn how to surf. Because I used to skateboard a lot. And so it was just there, this really strong desire that I want to learn how to surf. Like, maybe I'll move down here and I'll start a preaching program and we'll have a restaurant on the beach because I'm a cook, you know, and we'll have programs. But the motivation behind all those fantastical thoughts that happened for about a week was, I want to learn how to surf, you know? So we have to admit that when these things are there, these attachments are there. And for most people, because I'm a brahmachari, so I can have these whimsical, lackadaisical thoughts, for most people it's much more rooted in responsibility and the life they have to live and they have to move forward with. So really, I think it comes down to a matter of consciousness. So we may have these things, we may know we're not pure, we may know that we're going through anartha nivritti, we may know that, you know, we don't live up to the standard every day. I know I don't live up to the standard every day. So I don't live up to the standard every week. If we look at the real standard of Krishna consciousness, maybe I've never lived up to the standard, even one day. But as long as we recognize that we have a desire, that the best part of me really, really, really wants to be Krishna conscious, whatever that is, as that unfolds and that becomes more practical and real and it becomes more tangible in my life as I practice, the best part of me wants that, then I think all the other things are just details. As we fan that, as long as we do things which will keep us in that fire wherever we are in our life, I think it's just a matter of time. It's a matter of purification. Actually, I was just studying the other day, because I'm studying for a little bit of a project, and I was listening to a class by Adi Purush Prabhu, and it's about the 9 steps of bhakti by Rupa Goswami. And Sri Vishwanath actually, he elaborates them into 14 steps. And he quoted a really interesting verse in the 11th canto where Krishna actually says that I purify all the jivas and artas when they surrender to me. So in one sense, it's not our job to fight against these things and to remove them, but we are not the ones who will actually remove them. It's actually by our absorption in Krishna consciousness, we can move through anartha nivritti and these apathies and these mixed motivations and these things, because by paying attention to Krishna, Krishna will then purify our hearts. Chaito darpana marjana. So I think that's the, for me, in looking at my own devotional life, that has certainly been the case. If I tried to fight these things or say, I don't want this, or take a militant stance against sense gratification or whatever, we end up getting burnt out and it doesn't work. But the more we think about Krishna, the more we read, the more we chant, the more we take shelter of the real process, And then if we are blessed to be around Vaishnavas that are relishing that process versus doing it from the same platform that we're at, because that's still association, it's still good. We should be around like-minded Vaishnavas, and we have to have friends in Krishna consciousness. But if we get around someone who is actually up there and he's operating on the platform of the goal, of relishing the goal, then we can kind of catch the bug in increments. That's what Sri Vishwanath says in Madhurya Kadambini. This is really the access point into, you know, it shouldn't be controversial, but it's a little bit of a controversial term depending on where you are, into Ragmarg Bhakti, which is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, is we get around devotees like our Guru Maharajas, you know, like it may not be your Diksha Guru, but someone who actually has taste, and then we can get some taste. And then by that taste, we become purified and we move to the platform of real taste. So that's my understanding of it. And then another angle is, it's good if we recognize that these inadequacies are there, if we recognize that I'm not offering what I could, I'm not offering what I should, that means we want to. That means we're not blind to that anymore. For millions of uncountable, innumerable lives, we've been blind to it. The first step in the process of anartha nivritti is the revelation of our anarthas, which is the hardest part, actually. That's what our acharyas describe. The most difficult thing is to see them, because it's terrifying. It's really terrifying. I speak for myself. It's terrifying. But once you see them, it's just a matter of time until they're gone, because you can't unwant. You can't go back to ignorance. The truth is the truth. So that's... Forgive me, I'm very much your junior, so I'm not in any position to answer questions of yours, but...
You answer very well. Thank you.
Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Kishore Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Mantra Gopa Ki Jai.